Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on August 12th of 2012 under the headline, Before Newspaper Crusade, Tainted Milk Was Killing Babies. Here we go. In the late summer of 1909, a dairy farmer near Portland started getting worried. His barn cats kept dying, and after a few days he'd figured out what was killing them, the milk from his cows. This whole time, of course, he'd been shipping gallons of the same milk off to Portland to be fed to babies and young children, so he went to the state dairy and food commissioner and asked what he should do. The commissioner's advice, in essence, was, "It's just tuberculosis, don't worry about it." Quote,
"Tuberculosis may kill cats," the commish reassured the worried farmer,
"but it will fatten babies."
That didn't sit right with the dairyman, so he stopped by the offices of the Portland Journal on his way home. And that was how the Great Portland Pure Milk Crusade was launched. Two journal reporters immediately set out for the offices of the dairy commissioner to learn the truth. When they got there, the older of the two, John Wilson, set the tone for the interview by calling the commissioner a baby killer. The commissioner backpedaled, explained, denied, and finally demanded to know what business of the newspapers it was anyway. Quote,
"You're a liar,"
Wilson shot back, and somebody threw a punch and the fight was on. The other reporter, Marshall Dana, who was at the time brand new on the job, had to physically separate the two before somebody got hurt. The next day, Wilson quit his job at the newspaper. It's not clear whether this was prompted by the scene in the commissioner's office or not. Getting into a fistfight with an interviewee would get a reporter canned in a heartbeat today, but 100 years ago, the life of a newspaper guy was somewhat less circumscribed. In any case, editor Jack Travis told Marshall Dana to get on the story, and get on it he did. The young reporter embarked on a tour of dairy farms of Northwest Oregon, and it was quite an eye-opener. Quote,
"Out on the Columbia Slough Road, there was a dairy operated by a dairyman named Mike," Dana wrote 40 years later in his book. "The door of the dairy barn stood open. When we got a little closer, the disturbed flies flew up in a cloud. In front of the barn lay a dead calf. Evidently, it had been there quite a while."
The condition of the cows at the farm left little doubt in Dana's mind as to why the calf had died. There was filth everywhere. One of the dairy cows he could see had an open and oozing sore on its udder in a spot that would almost certainly have contaminated milk from that cow during milking. Mike freely admitted that he had a bad reputation with the state regulators, but that wasn't because of the filth. Quote,
"I get arrested for putting water in the milk," he told Dana cheerfully. "I pay a fine. Then I put enough more water in the milk to pay the fine."
But then, given the apparent quality of this farmer's milk, watering it down might have saved someone's life. Dana found another dairy on Canyon Road at which the owner made a practice of bringing his milk to town in big cans, and then, after delivering the milk, using the empty cans to transport garbage back to his farm, where presumably he fed it to pigs or something like that. After emptying the garbage out of his milk cans, he'd rinse them out, fill them back up with milk, and repeat the process. Dana learned that one of this fellow's customers over in East Portland had given some of this milk to a child who subsequently died in convulsions, an event that may have been entirely unrelated to the garbage milk, but probably wasn't. Dana soon learned that Portland had one of the highest rates of baby deaths from gastrointestinal complaints, a statistic that was clearly related to its cavalier attitude toward its milk supply. Dana filed story after story, and they ran under banner headlines that shouted from the top of page one. The paper kicked off the campaign with a massive banner headline in red type that read, "Bad Milk Kills Portland Babies." And while they didn't all rise to that level of drama and impact, they did remain on page one for weeks, and they had a considerable impact. Meanwhile, editorial writers fulminated and denounced the various players who were, as they saw it, conspiring to kill babies for a fatter profit. The public exploded with outrage. civic and social clubs adopted resolutions. The Chamber of Commerce weighed in on the issue, pointing out that bad milk was bad for business. Nobody wants to make a home and grow a business in a town where babies die. City and state officials responded to the pressure immediately, too. In fact, support came from every quarter save the dairy farmers, who naturally felt a little bit singled out. Although he had a job to do, Dana was sympathetic. Quote,
"There was so much censure and condemnation that it was no longer respectable to be a dairyman," he wrote. "The page one stories and the big headlines hit the good dairymen as well as the bad."
Among the dairy farmers, there was a good deal of resentment at the prospect of government interference with their business, at first. They came around quickly, though, when they realized what was really going on. The government was stepping in to protect the good farmers from the bad ones, to keep them from having to compete with men who undercut their prices by taking dangerous shortcuts. By the following year, the statistical situation was completely turned around, and Portland's milk supply was among the safest in the country. That didn't do reporter Marshall Dana much good, though. It would be years before he could touch a drop of milk again without retching. Key sources in this story have included works by Marshall N. Dana and Carl Kluster. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 500 stories originally created and published in newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulp Lit Productions, pulp-lit.com, which is a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0. Basically, that means you can do anything you want with the content. Reprint it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, fire up the old Cessna and skywrite it, whatever you want to do, as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But hey, if you need either A or B waived, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. Don't let my old middle school principal fool you. I actually do play well with others. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode, or maybe you'd like to get together and have a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and talk history, email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. And the next one will be a Friday episode, which means it'll be brand new. So until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.